G'day, I'm Scott Oxford. Welcome to Brand Jam, the podcast where we jam about brands because brand is our jam. Or is it brand ham today? And by ham, I mean a very special, famous brand of ham we've all heard of one way or another. Today, I'm jamming with my guest, Janie Dykes, from US-based global branded food company, Whole Foods International, where she is Senior Brand Manager for SPAM, responsible for developing international strategy, creating and executing the marketing and advertising plans, and overseeing the annual operating plan for the SPAM brand. She has 20 years in CPG marketing, that's consumer packaged goods, and the last 15 of those have been focused on SPAM. So she is absolutely the queen of SPAM, and I'm excited to ask her a whole lot of stuff around SPAM and branded food today. So to some, the name SPAM means a type of unwanted email. That's, you know, a reality. That's a lot of us know that. But to others, it's a staple protein of their diet. And for me, it's something that brings back these beautiful memories. Whether they're true or not, I'm not sure, but they bring me back memories of my grandparents and the fact that they had a depression mentality and they would buy tinned food for us whenever it was on special or whenever they thought we needed it. And SPAM was definitely among that. So it's been a part of my childhood and part of my history. It was invented in the year the Golden Gate Bridge was completed. Wow. You know, SPAM is a brand that has endured, and I look forward to a delicious, dare I say it, spicy and savory discussion on that today. And yes, I am hamming it up today. So until COVID, Janie was based in Shanghai, but she comes to us now from New York. Welcome, Janie. I am so excited to be jamming with you today.
Hi, Scott. Thank you for having me. It's definitely a pleasure to be here on the Brand Jam.
So when we first talked, you mentioned that you really missed living in China. That must be an amazing country to sell brands in, you know, let alone to live and work in. Why were you in China and what was it like selling brands there?
Well, I was based in China because of the SPAM brand. We had recently opened up a new manufacturing facility in China for the Chinese population. And I was given the opportunity to head to Asia to really focus in on where the core territory of the SPAM business is for our international division. So I moved there about 2 years ago, spent a year and a half there before COVID unfortunately hit. But it was a great opportunity. It was amazing to watch new and old brands come in and out of that market every day. I felt like every time I was going to a convenience store, I was seeing something new. Mm. It was very exciting, very dynamic. And it was just a great experience coming from a small country town where Hormel Foods headquarters is in Austin, Minnesota, to the big city of Shanghai. It was just, it was incredible.
Yeah, Shanghai is amazing. I've been there once. I went on a trade mission in 2002, so a long time ago, in preparation for the Beijing Olympics. And at the time, brand was really just starting to happen, particularly American brand and Western brand. So certainly US, international fashion brands, but US staple names now like KFC and, you know, Kentucky Fried and McDonald's and the like. And what was so fascinating at the time too was that there was all of these local ripoffs as well. So, there was like they just changed a couple of letters in the name. You know, there was McCancy, I think, which looked like McDonald's but was sort of slightly different and the same. And it seemed to be just an opening up at the time. And obviously an Olympics just changes everything. But, you know, again, now you've got products there that you're introducing, as you say, and you're seeing sort of, you know, brands just erupting. And what a massive, amazing city, hey? You know, just the, you know, the millions and millions and millions of people that just live there and then flow into it every day for work. It's incredible.
It's incredible. It was definitely an experience of culture and of amazing food culture. Mm. But everything, as you're saying, I mean, fashion, and it was just constantly on the move. And if you would leave for 4 weeks for a business trip and come back, I felt like one part of the city would be different.
New skyscrapers had gone up or something like that. Suddenly they just risen up. Yeah.
something was torn down and something was going up. It was just always, always an evolving door.
Yeah. So I have a number of clients who are managing brands into China at the moment. And, you know, we as a country are experiencing some, you know, agitation with the Chinese. There's some whole lot of sanctions and, you know, restrictions happening on us at the moment. How do you find managing a brand back into China? I guess having spent time there, it makes it easier. Mm. But it sounds like it's one of the more interesting and exciting and growing markets that you have.
Definitely. So when I first started in the international division over seven years ago, we were exporting products, spam products from the United States to China. And unfortunately, we were kicked out twice. Mm. And so as you can imagine, it was a great test market. We knew that we had great potential, but we kept getting our business kept getting stopped. So at one point, our management decided that if we were going to make this a substantial business, we needed to actually have our own facility there. Mm. And because of the longstanding relationships with the local Chinese government, as well as our own great reputation as an American food company, mm. we were able to establish a new production facility, state-of-the-art, something we're very, very proud of. But that was built about 5 years ago. And then we brought in the Spam brand to actually locally produce in China, which has made a world of difference. And our local team is actually doing all of the marketing and sales of the product. And again, localizing the product, not so much the formula. The formula is exactly what it would be like in the United States, yep. but localizing it for recipes and the communication touch points, that is what has made the difference. Mm. Now that it's not an American from the Midwest trying to market spam yeah. in China, it's now being produced and marketed locally.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting question. You manage the international portfolio, so you are working in these different territories. China is very specific and very culturally specific. I imagine a lot of the markets would be. What are some of your other? I mean, Australia is a market for you as well. How do we or other Western markets differ from say the Asian market?
Yes, so the Western markets have been that we've been selling to the Western markets since really the beginning of our international division, which has just celebrated 50 years. So it's like we're 51 years old within Hormel Foods. So if you can imagine, we took what we sold in America 50 years ago, and we just started shipping it abroad to our Western allied countries. And what we realized in the not so distant past is that we needed to localize these products, and we needed to start talking in the local language and start putting recipes in the local, repertoire of what you would cook.
Yeah, the stuff that we're used to.
Yeah, so that's really what we've been working on in the last 15 years, really, is how can we change the way that we are going to market to better meet the needs of our consumers? So as you ask about Australia, we have a slightly different formula than the United States. We talk in your language, which is a version of English. and we have recipes that would meet the desires of the Australian consumer. So how is that different than the Asian markets? Well, you were pretty much, the Western markets are pretty much aligned. You know, really nobody eats spam anymore, but a lot of people eat spam. So they're just the closet spam consumer. But the Asians, they're proud of it. They're proud to eat spam because that is what they have grown up with. That meets their taste profile with their rice and their vegetables and maybe their fish. Where I think the Western markets expanded a lot faster in prepared goods or fresh goods or the ability to buy fresh meat versus those Asian markets. So I think that's where the biggest differences are.
Yeah.
We still have a large business in Australia, but again, no different than the UK or Canada, where we're seeing the insurgence of spam or the the growth of spam really coming from the Asian populations moving into your countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hit the supermarket a couple of nights ago and bought a couple of tins. It was easy to find and there was heaps on the shelf, you know, like clearly it's a product that sells, you know, like it may not have been going in my trolley, but well, it did this week. And I opened a can yesterday and everyone at the office, everyone around the agency was just like, oh, if only we had some bread and some cheese. We want to do some toasted sandwiches, which I don't know if that's, I doubt that's an Asian thing. It certainly may not be a particularly American thing either, but, you know, making a toast, cheese toasty over here, throw some ham in was, you know, so it was great. And, but for me, it just, the flavor and the texture of it just took me back to my childhood in a beautiful way. And
awesome.
I think there's something really interesting about that because we're quite, you know, I'm a Gen X and a lot of us who grew up in the 70s, you know, we love some of those, you know, quaint little things that used to get eaten in the 70s over here. You know, these things called pigs in blankets, which is, you know, basically like prosciutto and, or the pigs in blanket is, I think, a prune and some ham wrapped around it or some other like these, you know, these sort of funny things that everything old is new again. And I think that's the thing about a product like that. It has endured for so long. It clearly has the potential to, you know, to take on a whole new generation and, you know, be something new. Because as you say, it's about a flavor profile. So I hadn't thought about that with the, particularly with the Asian flavor profile as well and the type of eating. Because that's so putting that sort of protein in a regular meal, it's sort of such a convenient, easy way to do it.
Definitely. And the Japanese have always said it is the meat is already seasoned. You don't need to do anything else to it. You take it out of your pantry and it's ready to go. So there's no additional thought that you have to put into it or any additional prep you have to put into it before they add it just to their relatively bland diet.
Yeah.
So it really makes that flavor pop.
Yeah, and look, dispelling the big myth about it too is it's actually got quite it's a really clean product. You know, there's very minimal ingredients, and they're all very natural. You know, so it's you know, it's I don't know why I didn't particularly think otherwise, but you know, it's it may not be ham sliced off the bone, but it's certainly a lot more convenient, a lot easier, and a lot more affordable as well.
So. Yes.
To that.
And so. I think a lot of consumers have that question about what is in spam. It there has to be a lot of things in it to make it last forever on the shelf. We do have a 3-year shelf life, and that is really due to the can itself, but like a can of beans or can of baked beans that you would put on your pantry shelf, you wouldn't think twice about opening that up. I probably, if it went past the expiration date that you didn't even know about, because they're processed the exact same way.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Same with tinned fish. You know, like I ate a lot of tinned tuna, and yeah, it's I don't think to look at how old it is. I just assume that it's canned, so it's fine. So
yeah, but let me dispel one more myth, if I may, about what's in spam.
Yeah.
So the only formula change that we have made over the last 83 years is that we actually added a potato starch ingredient to the meat. And what this does is it holds the juice in when it's cooked in the can, and the gel doesn't rise to the top. So I think a lot of people, probably our age, Scott, when they opened it once upon a time when they were kids, they probably remembered seeing that gel on top of the meat, which was really gross and scary to people. Like, what is that? Well, that's because there's no place for the juices to go, right? So it just rises to the top. Well, with this potato starch, it actually now keeps the moisture in the meat, in the meat block, and you get a lot less of that gel on top.
Yeah, cool.
So it's not as scary. You can do it. You can do it out there.
Absolutely. Food technology is amazing. I think, you know, having spoken to a food technologist at length, I think people would be astounded at how many things don't seem to have been, you know, for want of a better word, technologized. You know, like there's food technology is not a scary thing. It's there are some scary aspects of it, but yeah. So look, I iconic brand. I think I know how it got its name, but you know, tell me the story. How did Spam get its name? It's a big part of that brand.
Completely. And everyone wants to believe it stands for something. And right now our latest marketing campaign is Sizzle, Pork, and which spells Spam. Mm-hmm. But I guess originally how it was named was in 1936, they had developed the Spam formula. And it comes from this sweet meat at the front shoulder of the pig that they just, it was coming off in small chunks and they didn't want to waste it. So they created this kind of like bologna or a hot dog formula, right? And they wanted to put it in a can. So when consumers opened the can, they could take out that meat block and put it right on two slices of bread for a sandwich. So they take this product into Jay Hormel, who is the son of the founder of Hormel Foods. George A. Hormel is our founder, and his son Jay was having a New Year's party with his friends. And he is the one who came up with the Spam brand of the formula. And he said, I'll give anyone that can come up with a name for this product $100. And at that time in 1936, $100 is going to get you places, right?
Yeah, so, it's professional fees almost for a naming project.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, after a few cocktails, I'm sure, somebody came up with the combination of spiced ham.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it is, even though there's no spices in the thing other than salt and sugar. but spiced ham became the name of how it was, we believe the name was developed or created. But we really say Spam stands for Spam, just like Oreo. There's no defining definition other than it's just delicious.
Yeah. Well, the other one in my research, I found that it's also shoulders of pork and ham, which is funny because pork and ham are the same thing. But you did say it was from the shoulder. And I love the fact that that was about minimizing waste as well. You know, the product came about. I don't know if I'm telling this story accurately, but you'd be familiar with Bailey's Irish Cream. You'd have that. Yeah, apparently Bailey's came about because the advent of skim milk meant that there was, too much cream. And so they had cream lying around and wanted to do something with it. They created that product to use up all the cream. And apparently now Bailey's now uses so much cream that there's a surplus of skim milk. So it's funny. It's about the creating a demand, but a product comes to be. And then I always love to imagine whether somebody invents a product like that and can imagine the life that it would have, because, you know, even if we avoid, you know, this whole question of spam email, I love the fact that Monty Python, you know, British Monty Python, came up with a sketch that put spam to a whole new level. It's like any brand that becomes, you know, it's like today it might be, you know, like Jay-Z putting a brand name into a song. It's equivalent to that, really, isn't it? It's sort of entering the new zeitgeist in a new way. What did the Monty Python sketch, and I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes for anyone who hasn't seen it who wants to go and have a look. But what does looking back on the history of it, how does the Monty Python sketch rate for you guys as owners of the brand?
You know, I really didn't ever have a connection with anyone that worked on the brand back in those days when it came to be. And I could only imagine, like, the brand manager being, their mind being blown. Like, oh my gosh, did you just see that? Like, how incredible. Our brand name was just used 5,000 times in like 30 seconds. I mean, it was amazing. So actually, it has came to be, it's an area in our museum that we still focus on today, with this great history, but it also evolved into the Spamalot musical film, that's been in theaters for almost 10 years now, all over the world.
Yeah.
So this relationship from what was just a skit has really turned into something that has evolved for both brands. Mm. And, they've taken it from a skit to a Broadway musical play, and the Spam brand has been able to really just enjoy what came from it.
Yeah.
And that is, it has been in a lot of people's homes. Just those words of spam, 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 spam. I mean, just...
Yeah, gets in your head. You can't get it out.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, maybe not everyone has tried it because of it, but people know it because of it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when the Book of Mormon came out, which is not exactly something the Mormons, would see as being particularly Mormon. They actually went, you know what? They're putting our name out there. And I know when it hit Brisbane, the local Mormons bought billboards and were out in force and were like, you know, you've seen the musical, now come and find out what we're really like. And it's like, you know, these things can be a win-win. It's about, and there was a thing, I went back and looked at it and I was like, yeah, Monty Python didn't denigrate the product. They weren't doing that at all. Like, and that's exactly it. And that's that funny story of sort of how, it's funny that spam email comes less from spam the product and more from the Monty Python sketch and the way the actual sketch played out and just that sheer repetition. And so it's actually somewhat, in my mind, irrelevant to your product at all, because it was more about the mechanics of a sketch and the repeating of a word that could have been any word. Do you know, had it been Milo, you know, which is a product we have here, a tinned product we have here, it had been Milo, you know, like that has nothing to do with the product. It actually has to do with the way the sketch worked. And I don't know, I'm just, it's funny, isn't it, that then your product became, I mean, well, you've got the iconic product, but that's just such an odd coin of phrase that we've all got. Mm. And interestingly, in my mind separates the two. You know,
correct.
It actually, you know, you never think about your product when you think about a spam email, and when I think about your product, I never think about email. You know, like, so I don't know. I'm just interested in the dynamics of brand, and you know, for me, it's all of those subliminals and how it works in those associations. And I think, you know, I certainly, if there was tins of spam piled up in the merchandise section of the foyer of the theatre where Spamalot was playing, or a show bag that I could buy, you know, like a goodie bag full of it, I would have done it. Totally.
Yeah.
You know, I love taking those tins in yesterday at the office, and basically for afternoon tea, I sliced it up and took it round. And you know, our resident vegan wasn't in the office at the time, so she didn't need to decline. But yeah, it was you know, everybody partook and enjoyed. And as I said, we just had the regret that we didn't have our cheese and bread to make the toasty. So that's what's going to happen this afternoon. So
awesome. So my question is, did you fry it in a pan?
Not yet, but apparently that's what everyone said to me. They said it's awesome when it's fried. So that's the deal. So today we'll probably do the toasties, and tomorrow I bought a few tins, so tomorrow we'll fry it. I'm going to have the whole experience, so, and take it back, because interestingly, most people just said, oh, it tastes like luncheon meat, and luncheon, which is exactly what it is, but that's, you know, in Australia they used to sell that in a long sausage, sort of about yay big, foot long, that was sort of plastic, and it had that shrink tie on either end, you know, like a little metal tie. So it used, and you'd cut it off in slices. So yeah, very, very similar. And there are other sort of versions of it, but obviously competitors, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. And you mentioned a museum, Spam Museum. Mm. Tell me about that.
Yes. So we've just erected our third spam museum over the last 20 years, I believe.
You're like Disney.
I was a part of that. Sorry.
You're like Disney. You're setting them up all over the show.
No. So this was the third one in our town. We continued to build bigger ones.
Oh, cool.
In more, you know, just you have to keep them fresh and you have to keep them modern to keep the content in it. Obviously, the history doesn't change, but the evolution of now where we are today versus where we started 20 years ago is so significantly different. Our international presence is so much bigger today than it ever was. So we have this beautiful 14,000 square foot spam museum. You can see our latest advertising from all around the world. You can go through the international area where it features some of our key territories, Australia being one of them, with the Big Eras Rock, and of course the koala, and you know, the boomerang, to make sure people really get the full Australian experience. Then you can go into a booth of the UK, and it's called the Flying Pig because it's definitely a pub where you learn all about spam in the UK. And then you go down and go to the Philippines and see the latest advertising. But also, we have the history of Hormel Foods that we started as a meatpacking plant, in the other introductions to some of our very key iconic brands as well. And then there's a World War II section talking about how spam was used not only to feed the GIs, the US GIs and our allied troops, but also those civilians that unfortunately were in those ravaged, war torn areas that didn't have access to fresh meat or meat at all. And luckily, Spam had already been in a tin. It wasn't developed for the war, and a lot of people think that, but it was, it served a great need during the war because it went to those island countries that didn't even have electricity or fresh meat. So it worked out really well for everyone involved. We also have an area where you can pack Spam like you are working at the production line.
Nice.
And you can compete against a friend, and that's what we mainly do. But you also can compete against how many cans are being made at the plant at the exact same time.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. We also have a kids' play area. So kids can get into the Spam Museum and have a great experience interacting, having something to do and wear off a little bit of energy. But we have a house where they can go in and play in the kitchen. And of course, there's slices of Spam that they can grill up on the Barbie. So that's really fun to do.
Yeah. So I love it. That's all about brand story. And,
yes,
you know, that I mean, your category is branded food, and that means it's food with a story, you know? So it's food that has a story to tell, and it's such an important part of that. For those who can't visit, how is your how do you tell that story sort of in other ways? Obviously you've got Spam a lot doing it in theaters. Not really, but you know, how else do you just sort of keep that story alive? And I guess too, just the bigger picture of the role of story in branded foods.
Yeah, so how we keep the Spam brand story alive is we have this story being told on our websites, and we have a website for Australia specifically. It's spambrand.com.au, where consumers can go and learn about the different varieties that we have in market, all of the different recipes, have a lot of international recipes, but also Australia specific. And then we do talk about the museum and give a little virtual tour, but also about that history and timeline of the Spam brand that is so rich in heritage has a lot of meaning to a lot of people around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But telling that brand story for any brand is so critically important. And, you know, we run into younger people that say, oh, the war was so long ago, it doesn't matter to me. And it doesn't matter to maybe this generation today, but it meant a lot to the generations that served in the war, the generations after it, that Spam had a defined need for them. Mm. So, you know, I think the story changes, and that's okay, right? What is important today won't be important in just 20 years, but as long as this story continues to evolve and what you're doing for your consumers and how you're connecting with them is still so critically important as the evolution of the brand continues.
Yeah. And look, and on that note too is, you know, one of the things I love to do as a strategic creative is to take a product and give it a whole new life, you know, reposition it, give it a, you know, that as Trump wanted to make America great again, you know, making a product, you know, cool again or something that is, you know, so how do you decide with products like this when and where to do that? Clearly it's not an issue in Asia because it's a product going from strength to strength. And but yeah, do you have markets where it's probably, you go, all right, in this particular country, it's time to show its relevance to a whole new generation?
Right. So we have thought about definitely the generations. China, for example, they've had their own canned lunch and meat for as long, they claim it's as long, is as old as the Spam brand is. So it was about introducing the Spam brand in a much more premium, iconic, that American heritage way, comparatively to what their local brand was. And when we talked to consumers to make sure that we were understanding it accurately, why they were picking Spam over their local brand, it was because the Spam brand looked young and hip and modern. Mm. And it was different than what grandma had served them. So it's definitely about that brand positioning and how do you want to be seen in the marketplace is what we learned in China, at least, was really impactful, making sure that it had that cool hip vibe, right? So we're working with young influencers. We're trying to drive that premiumness and the reasons why they would want to pick us over their grandma's choice.
Yeah.
And that is really what is making the difference in China for us. Now, for example, in the Philippines, it's our number one export market outside of the United States, but we hadn't advertised ever in the Philippines. So in this example, we were known and loved, but we had never advertised. So how do you break through the clutter in just talking to consumers and trying to break through the clutter of all of the things that are going on, right? With billboards and TV and social media, how did we break through? So 3 or 4 years ago now, we created a boy band.
Awesome.
It was all for spam.
Love
and
it.
We went out on TV with this boy band. And let me tell you, people stopped in their tracks like, you mean the spam brand has their own boy band? You know, so again, it's just, you have to find that element of what you're trying to get accomplished. And then, you know, target that execution towards your end goal. And I still, you know, the boy band broke up, unfortunately. You know, it was just a one-hit wonder type group. And that's okay, because that's what it was meant to do.
Yeah.
So the joke constantly is, so where's your next boy band going to be?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I bet you have some secret, interesting plans for not another boy band, but something altogether new and fresh and interesting. And I think that's a huge amount of fun. And if you look back at those unintentional things like the, you know, the Monty Python sketch as well, and this incredible musical, there has to be a role that's sort of played in that. And it's almost, there's, even if there is, just embracing some dagginess,
yeah.
Embracing some, you know, it's, you know, it is what it is. And it's, you know, super handy and super fun and all of those kind of things. So it's, it's cool. And it must be great to work with a brand that has such a huge history and such a lot of story, because there's no shortage of that. There's got to be aspects to the brand that aren't even true. In my mind, spam went to the moon. Did it go to the moon? Did it go on a mission to the moon, or, you know, into space? Or is that just because I've just, you know, kind of gone there in my head, or it was a, well, they say brand is the conversations that have about you, that
yes.
happen about you. So maybe if that's what you want to believe, then spam went to the moon.
I'm not going to tell you no. I mean, we all have dreams, and I would hate to crush yours that spam went to the moon. Yeah.
Nice. So I just interesting question. Branded food is, how did you get into that? How did you, because you've been 15 years on spam, but before that you were working with Hormel as well, weren't you, and across other brands as well? Or
so when I joined Hormel just a little over 15 years ago, I was working on a few other brands, Dinty Moore beef stew, Hormel chili, a couple of our very again, there are a few years, actually, those two brands are a few years older than Spam.
Right.
So they've been with Hormel a very long time. So yes, I had the great opportunity of working in the beverage industry before I came to Hormel.
Yep.
And that was very exciting, working on cocktail mix, strawberry daiquiris, and margaritas.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved into the food world, because I wanted to work for a large Fortune 500 company that had great heritage and integrity, and our food safety is second to none. And that was what was really important to me. And I just so happened to start working on the Spam brand shortly after I joined Hormel, and I never looked back. It was it was an amazing opportunity to work on the domestic business and to see that evolve as we launched new flavors and new packages of the Spam product. But then when I moved into the international arena, like, my mind was blown because of all of the people that loved the brand in a much different way than what I had been exposed to in the United States.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned the brand story, I had a colleague who was an introvert, and he was my counterpart on the Spam brand, and I'm a very much an extrovert. And I would wear a Spam branded shirt, or I would carry a Spam purse through the airport, and he would walk behind me. I would get at least 6 to 12 interactions every time I walked through an airport because somebody had something to say to me about it.
Mm.
And it could have been good, it could have been bad, it rarely was indifferent, but someone had an opinion and someone had a story to share. And that is what I find so amazing about the Spam brand.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, a lot of people know about it, and for many reasons, right?
Yeah.
But that connection that people have with the brand is so powerful. And I haven't met many other brands that have that dynamic power.
No, I agree. And look, it's okay for people not to like a certain type of food, yeah. You know, like it's sure. Okay. You know, I asked my 12-year-old daughter, I said, you know, I showed her the tins and well, she was with me when we went shopping and I said, have you ever tried it? And she goes, yes. And it's not to my taste. I think she says something like that, which is an odd thing.
Very fair.
Odd way of her to say. And it's like, that's okay. You don't have to love it. That's food. Food's you know, different people love it. But yeah, but everybody has a story. And the fact that she is aware of it. Do you know what I mean? She has grown up in a house where it has not been a product, sorry to say, it's not been a product on our shelf, but she's aware of it and it's been part of her life, probably through her grandparents. Her grandparents are in their 70s, and so, you know, that's entirely possible that's where she experienced it. And there's also the other aspect too, which is you can prepare something poorly or well, you know, like anything.
Exactly.
You know, a great steak can be destroyed by the way you cook it. So, you know, if someone, you know, serves you up something, then it's not necessarily great. But yeah, it is those stories, those conversations that happen, and I think that's, you know, that's what sort of keeps it alive. And for me, I looked at the entire portfolio of products under Hormel, and Spam's the only one I recognise because it's possibly the only one that's sold in Australia. Would that be fair to say?
No, that's actually not fair to say. Our other large brand that we sell in Australia is the Stag Chili brand.
Okay.
And it's not quite as big of sales as the Spam brand in Australia, but it has been in the market for over 10 years.
Yeah.
A very good eat out of the bowl chili. I think the way that they actually even advertise it is put it over noodles or over rice, and it makes a very good complete meal. Just that hearty, made with Australian beef, of course. So yes, it is the other brand that you might see the next time you go to the store, you might recognize it. But those are the two main items that we have in the Australian market.
Yeah, and presumably that's because your research with customers suggested that those were the, you know, products that were going to relate, you know. So, and others are very parochially American, you know. I looked at a range of the others and they look to me as Australian as they would be very specific to American tastes, in the same way that other foods are very specific to an Asian taste, that kind of thing. So.
Exactly. And we do a lot of our business in fresh meat. Getting fresh meat to Australia isn't the most economical. But, you know, there's other reasons why we don't have a larger range in Australia. But not for the lack of wanting or trying. But Spam has always been our flagship brand in Australia for sure.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you've no doubt evolved the packaging, but it still has it evokes a beautiful American ideal, kind of, you know, in terms of its colors and the like, you know, like it hasn't been corrupted along the way, and clearly that's been very carefully managed. And speaking of carefully managed, you've been on this brand for 15 years. That's a testament to itself, to the internal brand of this organization that you're a part of. You know, it's not only a product that you can really believe in, working with people that, you know, you can get excited about, and you know firsthand around areas of quality and food safety, all of those things that sort of matter, but clearly it's something that's captured your heart. For a brand to kind of do that, it's not just a job. It's, you know, the brand is obviously, that internal brand is a huge thing. Can you tell me about that sort of culture that you get to work within all the time?
Yes. So Hormel has an amazing culture of people with longevity at our company. It's very common for people to have 30 to 40 years within the organization, which is very uncommon these days, right? We're not job jumpers or company jumpers. But for me to have worked on the Spam brand for domestically and internationally, I also was in sales for a couple of years where I sold the brand. So that's where my 15 years comes in. So I was in three different divisions within the company, but always working on the Spam brand.
Yeah.
And that really has evoked a lot of consistency, obviously, through brand management and being the brand steward. but it also has allowed me to continue to build not only my internal resume, but my experience to continue to grow the SPAM brand for the company. And I've been very fortunate, and not many other people, I don't think, can say that they've been on one of the brands for this amount of time, where some days it's grueling and I'd like to do something different, but I don't know what else, honestly, that I would want to do. That's how much passion and love I do have for the SPAM brand.
Yeah.
And it's been so amazing to watch it evolve, especially going to Asia and seeing it through a different lens has really opened up my eyes to the world of possibilities of what we can do with this brand for the next 80 years to come.
Yeah.
So I think that's what continues to drive me. It's a testament to Hormel's commitment to this brand. And yes, we're really excited about where we are today with it, because sadly, with the pandemic, not sadly that we have a pandemic in around the world, but thankfully we have the SPAM brand who's been there again and again and again, and this time is no different, to make people feel comfort that they have a product in their home or in their pantry that they know that they can depend on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a protein, and it's tasty, you know, so it's as you say, you use the word that comfort, you know, it is comfort food. And and I think that's it for us, you know, all of the applications of it are sort of around that kind of comfort kind of space. So, but yeah, 15 years, that's pretty cool. And it does sound like an amazing company. I did some work with a company that was a similar age. They're actually a Caterpillar dealer. They would regularly, they had such a strong sense of family, I guess, in there. And it's not just the family that you are related to, it's the family that you work with. And yeah, when these people celebrate 30 or 40 years in the business, it's an incredible part of your life committed to one organization, and it says a lot about that organization. So there's more hamming on the SPAM that we can do, but I want to dig into a few of my other questions as well that maybe tap into you. And I want to take you back to childhood and the question of either a brand that just captured, that you remember capturing your heart and soul back then, or when you first became aware of it. What's a brand you remember that took hold?
So it was the Heinz ketchup brand, or the Heinz brand, but ketchup specifically. So I was born and raised in a small country town outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where Heinz ketchup was manufactured.
Yeah.
And I remember always having Heinz ketchup in our refrigerator, so that wasn't anything alarming. But it was when I would go into Pittsburgh to see a baseball game or to have that amazing experience, just getting the opportunity to go into the city, we would arrive in and you would see the Heinz manufacturing facility. And it would have their logo, Heinz, big Heinz logo and lights. And it was just something that I always remembered of being really special. And that's kind of when you made it to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I was probably in high school, prior to college, was saying, I'm going to be the Heinz ketchup brand manager someday.
Wow.
Like, why Heinz ketchup, right? Of all things on the planet, there was one variety. It came in a bunch of different sizes and bottles. But I just had this overwhelming desire to be the Heinz ketchup brand manager. So to me, that is something that has been very dear to my heart for years. I would ask at restaurants if they had Heinz ketchup, and if they didn't, I wouldn't order anything that needed ketchup. I mean, that's how loyal I was to that brand.
That's awesome. But it clearly became part of your story because of those experiences early on. It clearly took a place in your heart. And let's face it, who doesn't love ketchup? Or as we call it in Australia, tomato sauce.
Tomato sauce. Yeah, right.
So, I know there was a time when I think one of my children wouldn't eat anything without tomato sauce on it. It was on, or ketchup, on. It was on everything.
But
it's more than that for you, isn't it? It's actually about that as an icon. Every time you drove past, you went, I'm going to do that. And I know for me as an ad man, you know, like I love I love writing TV commercials. You know, I love writing creative, but I love TV commercials. They're just such a filmic way of bringing it all together. And I remember very, very early on, you know, I would recreate TV commercials, you know, for dishwashing liquid and stuff like that. And yeah. And I it was kind of like the magic of it took hold very, very early. And so, like you say, is being, you know, being a brand manager is like you just went, that story is special to me. I want to steward it through. I want to be a part of it. You know, I want to kind of sort of shape it. And that's the privilege I find getting involved with brands, where particularly where we're repositioning them or helping them. You know, my background is a lot in behavior change, and I love using all of that science to work with a brand that isn't trying to change a health behavior or something like that, but are trying to just get someone to think really differently about something. Mm-hmm. And so for you especially, I think that'd be a great thing to do, to just sort of go into places and with this product and change people's minds and open up new territory. So I can see why, you know, brand management became passionate really, really early.
Absolutely.
So you still use Heinz ketchup today?
I do. I have it in my refrigerator.
Yeah.
And I just a quick story of Australia and Heinz ketchup. When I first saw it on the shelves and it said Heinz tomato sauce, I just could not wait to tell my family.
Well, the good news is that we love you Americans so much that we actually sell ketchup as well. So we did get there. It's just Australians were so parochial for so long that we just, you know, we sort of enjoyed that idea of it. But I think we wanted to go to America and try it rather than have it here. It just didn't seem to make sense to us here. It wasn't part of our story, but we're a little bit more out of our comfort zones now in Australia, I think. And we can do tomato sauce and ketchup at the same time. And, you know, we can do both of them. Just mentioned stories, and I meant to ask you this before. You said everywhere you go, when someone sees spam on your shirt or whatever, they have a story. Have you got a really beautiful story? Is there something that comes to mind, or just an example of a great story that that you can tell us of that someone told you one day, is it just that they're all a little bit magical because they're all relating back to your brand?
Well, definitely, they're all magical for many reasons. But you know what? I don't have one that stands out other than a fishing story.
Mm-hmm.
We received a lot of pictures of very large fish that were caught with spam. So,
wow. But
that's beside the point. I mean, hey, whatever yeah. works. I mean, I'm thrilled for them. But every story really had that family connection in it.
Yep.
There was a lot of my grandfather or my grandmother but it was always around family time and that special moment that brought the family together. And I think that was what makes spam so special to me, is that even when I'm, you know, those were stories that were told to me, but even when I'm in focus groups and I'm listening to consumers talk about my brand and they're saying, well, it was really special because we got to eat spam when it was typhoon days. Like, so the schools would be closed and they would have to stay at home during a typhoon, but it was really special to them because they could eat spam then as a family.
Mm.
Or, you know, sometimes they would have it at their funeral dinner, you know, when the family got together after a funeral. So I've heard so many amazing stories about spam, good and bad, but it always was about bringing the family together. And to me, that's magical.
Yeah. That really reminds me of episode one of the series. My guest Deb, who's English, she told me that they used to have these things called Vesta curries, which was a prepackaged rice curry. It had sort of freeze-dried, I think, peas and some protein in it. And it's probably not something that looks particularly appetizing, but it was something that every Friday night they had Vesta curry, and it was family time, and it was the essence of togetherness, and it was all of those. It's like, for me, the greatest blessing of COVID, and what I'll always remember from COVID, is family time. It
yes.
gave us time. It I have three teenage children, and it gave us time to reconnect when life was conspiring to take us apart. And that is, nothing could have done that like COVID did that. And, you know, it's, I think we've reached a point where we've got to start looking more and more at the blessings of it. We're certainly aware of the curses and the pain and the suffering, but as you say, it's a blessing for your product that you can be a blessing in that time. And you know, it's one of those things. But I love that when brands find their way into our hearts and into our relationships in an honest way, you know, in a way that's beautiful and honest and celebrates family. And
it had nothing to do with advertising. It had everything to do with just being present at that time.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Love it. So tell me about a brand today. What's a brand that you trust? I think trust is incredible. As you say, you know, when we first talked about spam as well, there is that trustworthiness that comes from food safety, and it comes from reliability, and it comes from looking at the ingredients and not seeing scary things on it as well. But in terms of you away from spam, what's a brand that today that you trust? Tell me about it and why.
Going away from the spam brand's really hard.
There is life beyond spam, darling. There is.
I can't remember that moment.
Just in your personal life, you know?
Does it have to be food, even though we're...
No, it can be anything. Any brand at all that you, that you, Janie, trust and means a lot to you. Yeah.
So I'm going to actually go with the Jeep brand.
Yeah.
And I am now a proud owner of my second Jeep, and I'm a Jeep Wrangler girl. I've not gone to the Rubicon or anything fancy. Yeah. But the Jeep brand to me, again, has one of these longevities like the Spam brand does, and it's been around for quite a long time. It has served our country really well in time of need, in time of struggle, but it also has become just a staple vehicle now in the United States. And from my travels around the world, I've noticed it probably in every country that I've been in. So it definitely has that American iconic vibe going for it as well. But what I really like about Jeep is that it is a very well-made vehicle. I am very trustworthy of it. Obviously, living in Pennsylvania, you need something it's compatible with snow and rain and all of the different terrains. But the other thing that I love about it is that it holds its value really well. And to me, that says it's a good brand that people trust, not just an owner, but those out there as well looking for a used vehicle. And when I can buy a brand new vehicle for just about as much as I could buy a used one for, to me, that says a lot about a brand and the, you know, the reputation that it has.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that is not controlled by the company. That is entirely independent, and it has to do with reputations. And as we said, the conversations that are had about you and what people think and what they understand. So, from a brand that you trust, and this may be the same answer, but is there one that you love, you absolutely adore? I know Spam is that one, but is there another brand?
You picked it. No.
Is there another brand? Is there something in your life that you just love, and why?
Yes, and this is probably probably a little bit too superficial, but there is a brand that makes me happy every time I go to the grocery store. And I'm not a grocery store shopper. I mean, even though that's what I do and what I should be doing every day of the week is going to the grocery store. Literally, I just don't enjoy it. But when I go and look at the Oreo cookie product set at a grocery store, that makes me happy. Not only do I love it because I love to eat it, I also love what they have done for their brand. Mm. And they have exploded, at least in the United States and a few of the countries around that I have traveled to.
Yep.
They have taken this little sandwich cookie and they have expanded it with very little effort. And I am just so impressed with the work that they have done, the shelf space that they have now carved out, which is at least 8 feet, excuse me as I use my feet, but I'm just really impressed with this brand who's gone from a black and white cookie to now a colorful arrangement of taste and flavors and giving their consumers something to always be looking for the next new one.
Yeah, look, I agree. And again, my kids all, it's their default. You know, we have some iconic Australian biscuits that they've never really connected with, and there's just something about Oreo that has done that. And it will, we're regularly given any chance they get, they'll put one of those into the trolley. And so that's why I'm aware of how prevalent the range is. But without diluting its brand at all. And
exactly. And I still buy the iconic, vanilla filled chocolate cookie every time.
Yeah.
But I do love looking at what they've done. The other brand, now that I'm getting excited about this, is Peeps. Are you familiar with the marshmallow Peeps?
No, I'm not. But we might have it here. I'm not sure. Tell me about it.
So it's Peeps.
Yep.
And it was the iconic, iconic. I like how you just throw out this word now. It was the traditional Easter treat, and it was a little marshmallow yellow. It had yellow sugar on it, and it looked like a little duckling. Yep. And you could find it only at Easter time.
Yep.
And it then started to morph into other holidays. So then it turned into a little bunny face for Easter as well. And then it turned into Christmas trees or pumpkins or whatever for all of our holidays.
Yeah.
It then turned into merchandising. And now it has turned into flavors in Oreos or flavors in cereal. I mean, it has just expanded over the last 15 years to something I couldn't have ever imagined. And it's one of those things where people are like, I know Peep, but I'm not going to eat it because it's gross. Or, you know, and it's not gross. It's marshmallow with sugar. There's nothing bad about it, right?
Yeah.
But it's not something that I don't know many people who love them, but I know a lot of people who know about what they've done. And to me, that is an amazing brand, is taking it from just this one-time use to expanding it into so many moments into people's lives.
And isn't that fascinating when a brand can take ownership of a category like that? Like we were talking about Jeep before. Jeep does, you know, people call things Jeeps even when they're not branded Jeep, because they took, you know, particularly the wartime Jeep, that iconic one. But over here, you know, the Band-Aid brand, which is basically sticking plaster, we just call it a Band-Aid. You know, it doesn't matter what brand it is. And so what those guys did, Peeps took ownership of marshmallow, basically. And so you basically put marshmallow in something and you put the brand on it, and then suddenly there's a royalty going back to Peeps, because it's, you know, it's got to be the right kind of marshmallow. But I think that's really sort of, you know, really a pretty kind of it's a crossover. You've really arrived when the world has attributed you to the right to take ownership of that, and their conversations sort of talk about that. Just on the topic of conversations and customers, I just wanted to circle back to what you were saying. You mentioned focus groups before, and I think you're referring to focus groups in Asia that you are part of. How do you find culturally, because for us, Asian cultures, very, very different to Australian culture, but America is very like us, but also quite culturally different as well. How do you find customer research around brand in these different countries differs, from Asia to Australia, say, and back to America? What are the key differences there?
Really, the key differences are getting people to talk.
Yeah.
So, a lot of Asian cultures, they don't want to be seen as boastful or putting attention on themselves or saying the wrong thing that maybe others don't agree with. And if you can imagine, the American is the exact opposite. Yep. We like to talk a lot. We have an opinion. We're going to share it. And so it's the moderator's role is just mind-blowing to me of how they know how to get those consumers to talk.
Yeah.
So my first example of watching this unfold, and this is such a cool question that you asked, because I remember it distinctly. We were in China and everyone was sitting there stone-faced, not saying a word. And the moderator just started literally pushing snacks at them. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking like a little candy bar. I mean, I'm talking like there were meat snacks and big dough buns and all of these things that these people are being forced to like eat.
Yeah.
But it was once they broke bread together, and breaking bread is, I know, a little bit bigger than having a snack. But once they were able to start eating and relaxing and talking maybe even amongst themselves about the snack that they were eating, then they opened up and they were happy to share their experiences. But that was the biggest difference I've noticed, is just getting people to talk. And how do you get people to talk? And what is that commonality that makes people do that?
Yeah. And in Australia, because I love research and I love groups, they're so great for formative research. And I've written some of the most successful campaigns I've ever done in the research room, because you're just seeing your customer before you. But we have about... Yeah. Our room is half, you know, is the equivalent to half the Asians and half Americans. So half the room wants to own the entire conversation, the other half doesn't. And the moderator's job is to manage, you know, to get that, you know, to rise up the quiet and to manage down the others and actually make sure some real stuff happens. And so, you know, it's groups are amazing, but do you guys ever do one-on-ones at all? Because I find one-on-ones, it can be sort of a powerful way, you know, even just one-on-one phone interviews, powerful way to sort of really dig into what someone's really thinking and what's really going on in them.
We do do them, not as often as we probably should. We just conducted a research group of about 400 in the Philippines on one-on-one.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm waiting for those results. But it was around a specific topic, and they literally went to the consumers' homes, the respondents' homes, to really talk in depth about this topic. Mm. So we're really excited to see what the results are, and to really get some key learnings from it, for sure.
Yeah, super. That's cool.
Yeah.
Have you in your kit bag of experience, I want to delve into as a brand manager and as a marketer, what do you think is the biggest mistake that, say, leaders make around brand?
I think there can be a lot of mistakes made because we're too afraid to take a risk.
Yeah.
And I can say that in the sense of resources, or in the sense of trying a new platform. But the mistakes I think that I personally probably have made over the years is not being willing to step outside of the box and maybe spending a little bit more on something that I thought was a little bit too risky, or trying a new platform because, you know what, the old was good and it's always worked. But what I'm finding is in this ever-changing, very fast-paced world, we need to be comfortable in the very uncomfortable, and we need to take those risks. Mm. If it is the spending the money, or if it is trying a new platform, that we need to be able to step out there and say, it might not have worked as well as I'd hoped, but I learned.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so important, is allowing ourselves to fail, but knowing that we've learned something also is extremely empowering. So I think that's, as leaders of brands, I think that is something I struggle with, and you know, managing up to my managers too, is to making everyone aware that this could be risky, but it also could have great reward.
Absolutely. Every piece of advice from the biggest voices in the world on business tell us failure is essential to moving forward into success. You know, Brené Brown, Simon Sinek, these people who have a research base, to, you know, who are very smart and clever and advising some of the top companies in the world, are all saying you've got to take risks and you've got to do that. In our own little realities, it's such a challenge, isn't it? And I'm a small business owner as well, so I know all too well how scary it is to take risks and to move into that territory. But yeah, the rewards are great, and I guess that's why we do customer research, isn't it? Because that often gives us the evidence to support why we're doing something unusual or different. And it doesn't lie, you know. That research doesn't lie if you've got a good authentic moderator, then it doesn't lie. Janie, I am so sad to say we have just smashed an hour there, and I have one more question, and I think you've already answered it for me. So it's just the last question I always ask, and that's aside from the brand you're working for now, but it's basically what is a dream brand that you've never worked on but want to? You know, what would the dream brand be? And you said before you're working in the favorite brand, but what else aside from Heinz ketchup and aside from Spam?
Oh my gosh, I honestly, I don't think I've ever thought about this question. Isn't this crazy? I mean, since I was a kid and wanted to work for the Heinz brand, I think it would be, oh my gosh, Scott.
I'm sorry.
Tough question. Well, okay. Dun, dun, dun.
But you've never worked for Heinz, have you? You've not worked for Heinz?
No. I honestly, when I got to Hormel and got into this business of this family business, I mean, we are a large company that is run like a family business. I never, honestly, I haven't looked for a new job in 15 years. And who says that? Who ever says that?
Someone who's happy says that. Someone who's,
who's found their
home.
I do say I do have the greatest job within Hormel Foods, and I truly believe that. I get to do a lot of amazing things, and I get to meet a lot of amazing people, and I get to work with this iconic brand that has stood the test of time, and I have no doubt that it will continue on for another 80 years. But what would another brand be? I don't know if it would be like the World Wildlife Federation or something like that. I mean, something taking my passion of love for animals and giving back to the world, I think would be something very, something that I would have a strong desire to do.
Yeah.
Maybe in my retirement. But no, there really isn't a brand that stands out to me today to say, that's what I want to do. I mean, I love what Oreo has done. I love the M&M's type brand. Obviously, I love a lot of things with sugar in it. So that is definitely something that, those are some really cool brands that I think would be really fun to work on. But they're doing amazing things, and I'm doing amazing things. Yeah. So right now, I think I'm going to continue focusing on what I'm doing, but maybe in the future, it would be more of that charity work of giving back to the world and the environment.
Yeah, love it. I've so enjoyed this, Jadie. Thank you for just being such a great sport and just reintroducing Spam to my life. And it's here to stay now. And for my family and friends, we'll not hear the end of it for a while. And you truly have an iconic brand, and you've been around looking after it for long enough to say that you have a serious bit of ownership of that brand. So it's as much a part of you as you're a part of it. So so congrats and thanks again. And
thank you.
I'm so glad to have met you.
Thank you very much, Scott. It's been a lot of fun, and thank you for giving Spam a shot again, and we hope it does stay in the family pantry.
Yes, and look, and if you are ever looking for an Aussie agency to do something totally radical and new, I think you've found it. Hey, yep, nudge, wink, wink.
Yes.
So I'll if you have a shout. Yeah, absolutely. You know where I am. So thanks for joining us on Brand Gem today. If you have a burning question you'd like me to answer, or you think that there's someone like Janie who definitely should have as a guest or a category, head on over to brandjam.co and get hold of me with the contact form. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do. That looks good for me and helps me get my amazing guests to come on. And because brand lives in the conversations people have about us, I love to finish Brand Jam with the words of my flawed hero, the ad man Don Draper from Mad Men, says, "If you don't like what's being said, change the conversation." Catch you later.